Time now for Connecting the Diocese.
One of the most oft-quoted quotes of St. Francis, preach the gospel all time and occasionally use words. The whole idea is that you preach by your life, preach by how you live, you preach by what you do, how you behave. Those sorts of things are so important.
And thank you for tuning in, Connecting the Diocese from the Diocese of La Crosse, Wisconsin. My name is Jack Socia. Last week we had the Cabin Fever show because of pledge drives covering us up on certain days. And of course, the Sunday show was on Super Bowl Sunday. This week, I want to give you kind of a tapestry or patchwork quilt of stories. It's kind of funny that even though I have been doing this kind of thing for quite a few years in many different stations and networks, I do not consider myself a reporter in the classical sense. There was some minimal training in broadcast school about how not to make shock headlines to get attention, but aside from that, I pretty much left that particular area to reporters. Of course, the thing is that actually I have been reporting. I've been reporting weekly on things like business talk networks, frequent guest on Wisconsin Public Radio. They were even calling me all the way from a network in Australia during the big dot-com technology boom to talk about what's going on in the USA. I was in Baltimore on a big popular morning show talking about technology once a week. So what I realized is I am a reporter, but I tend to be more comfortable reporting about things than about people or events. I've always leaned more towards talking about or explaining technology things. I've written books on how to use computers and digital cameras and talk about the latest in whatever technology is going on, leaving people topics to other people. And certainly when it comes to matters of faith, I turn it over to our bishop, to priests, to people who have dedicated their lives to religion and have a much deeper understanding than I do. And I stay away from politics because you can jump into that shark tank and never come back out again. On the other hand, I've always been one of these people who likes to stop in the middle of momentous times and just try to catch a sense of it and look around and observe all the things that are going on. I won't say I've done this all the time. There are major events that have occurred in the United States and around the world that I'm completely oblivious to. I did spend a lot of times, for example, many years ago during the Watergate investigations. It's all a blur, all a complete blur. And so I have great respect for people who chronicle wars and disasters and great events and great societal changes without having the soda straw to look through, who can see the big picture. But it is an inescapable fact that because of the coronavirus, I have been working from home for the better part of 2 years, as many of you have. I don't think that as we are now into year three of this whole thing, that people fully understand the big picture as to what's going on. One thing that greatly concerns me is the group of people who have adopted the so-called I've had it with COVID attitude and are simply saying, I'm not going to deal with it anymore. As far as I'm concerned, it doesn't exist. Well, I was just listening to Dr. Fauci last night, who said that you may be thinking you're done with COVID, but COVID is not done with you. These are very hard words to hear for people who, like me, are just sick and tired of it. Just tired of being at home most of the time and no longer doing many things I used to like to do, which even includes going to secondhand stores to look around for old cameras and many of the recreational items that wasted my time but were a lot of fun. I am greatly concerned also when I see photographs of events going on both in churches and secular operations as well and sporting events and things like that at the phenomenal number of people who are packed together who are not wearing any masks. Now, there are those who will say, well, Jack, I thought it was over. Everyone's vaccinated. It's all taken care of. No, it absolutely is not. And sadly, I will blame some of the media for making generous comments about how things are going that are not really accurate. For example, I was just reading today a statement in the media that, quote, the majority of Americans are fully vaccinated. Well, let's unpack that a little bit. First, how do you define fully vaccinated? Fully vaccinated means you got the first two shots. It does not mean you got the booster. And what is their definition numerically of fully vaccinated? 64%. Well, yes, technically that is the majority because it's over 50%. But if you ask me to go mow your lawn and I only mowed 64% of your lawn, you would say, what the heck are you doing? Why did you stop? When you drop in the idea of getting the booster shot, which is still sadly and badly needed, it's only 28%. Only 28% of the population has the original two shots and the booster, which is really helping reduce the crossover infections. And then you go, wait a minute, oh gosh, here we go again, crossover infections, what are you talking about, Jack? Now, this is not Wisconsin news, this is Minnesota news, but still, it applies in general to what's going on. Minnesota health officials say more than half of the residents of the state who tested positive for COVID-19 in December were already vaccinated. So to boil it down, this means even though you are vaccinated and the vaccines do work and they help reduce the seriousness if you do get COVID, and it can stop COVID in most cases, in a lot of cases, a new variant is breaking through. And I'm sure some people at this point are saying, why can't they make it better? There's no point in getting a vaccine if it doesn't work. Well, that's really just not the case. The problem is simple. Though the public has learned many things about viruses and epidemiology and the human immune system over the past 2 years, many still seem unwilling to accept that what works for today's facts may not work for tomorrow's. Any shift in guidance or perspective is considered weak and waffling, playing politics, or flat-out betrayal. Experts know that right now, in many areas, peeling back the precautions against the virus is safe if done cautiously, which is why we are seeing mask mandates easing in many states. These actions can help the public gain confidence and provide useful information should another variant concern emerge. But public health leaders also know that if another variant of concern arises, it will necessitate yet another reversal of guidelines, an action that will likely be viewed not as evidence of admirable responsiveness, but rather as an evidence of a flailing and mostly useless public health voice, which is really silly. Despite what we all would love to believe, we are still in a pitched battle with a shape-shifting virus, and you need every weapon you can have to keep it at bay. And this means the two shots, the booster that has already been out for a while, and any new booster that comes along, plus the basic practices of staying out of crowds and wearing masks, especially inside. And also avoiding garbage information about the virus. I mean, some people are still saying, well, if you get the virus naturally, it's just as good as getting a shot. No, it is not. That's right up there with somebody who was claiming that, and I'm not making this up, folks, that if you were to snort baby shampoo, it would help you prevent getting the virus. Okay. I'm going to run out there and get some Johnson & Johnson's baby shampoo right now and stick it up my nose. To underscore my point that this is still going on, it has not gone away. We are not in the magical spring when the virus disappears. Here's a short excerpt of a conversation I had with Bishop Callahan a few weeks ago about him getting infected for the second time, even though he was vaccinated.
I'm getting pretty tired of COVID because, once again, I had it and I wound up having my first ride in an ambulance as a patient.
Wait a minute now. Back up now. As a patient? What?
As a patient. I was being taken from my hotel in Peoria to St. Francis Hospital, downtown Peoria.
I don't mean to be intrusive, but was this because you got COVID again or what?
This was COVID. Yes, this was COVID related. And the first time I got COVID in October, fortunately, I was home. So I was home sick and had, you know, all of the necessary perquisites for remedying the situation here. So, but then this time, this happened at my old stomping grounds at Holy Family Parish. I went back to the hotel because, you know, I was feeling kind of punk. So I said, well, you know, I'll go. We're supposed to go out for dinner tonight and all this blah, blah, blah. I didn't even get to the restaurant. I was so sick. They came in and my friends, you know, looking at me like, oh my, call an ambulance. And in the ambulance, every single needle they could find, they stuck in me. IV needles and stuff. Quite an operation, you know, in terms of dealing with COVID. This doggone thing is of the devil. Folks, you know, take this seriously. This is not something to play around with. This is a deadly disease in many ways, unfortunately. You know, it is. And for those of us who have gotten it again, this is my second go-around, a dubious distinction at best. Now, feeling better, coming back into my own, and got my voice back, got my sense of humor back, I think. And, so we're going to see how it's all going to go.
Yeah. What's scary to me is that had things been back to relatively normal in our mind, I could have been at the very small kind of not well-ventilated studio with Bishop Callahan before he went to Peoria, and he probably already would have been infected with the virus, and I would have been in this room with him for at least an hour and a half, if not longer. Maybe I could have gotten infected and unknowingly brought it home and given it to my wife. This would not be good because she has some concerns with allergies and things that do affect her breathing. And so this is why I'm staying here. This is why we're doing this remotely. This is why I am not going into crowds where only 64% are vaccinated and less than 28% have the booster shot. I'm simply not going to do it because I know you got to live your life, they say. I'm doing my life. I'm living my life. I'm planning on staying alive. I'm planning on protecting my wife as well and those around me. The other thing that's going on that was really one of the main reasons why I'm going off on this tangent, if you want to call it that, and this is really frightening. This is frightening to anyone who is concerned about the life and health of the unborn. New research suggests the coronavirus can invade and destroy the placenta and lead to stillbirths in infected women. Stillbirths are uncommon at this time, but pregnant women with COVID-19 face an elevated risk, particularly with the original Delta variant. Researchers in 12 countries, including the United States, analyzed tissue from 64 stillbirths and 4 newborns who died shortly after birth. All cases involved unvaccinated women. The study bolsters evidence from small case reports. It indicates that the placenta damage, rather than infection of the fetus, is often the cause. They're saying that this infection getting into the placenta, which is the part of the birth process that nourishes the fetus, is preventing the nutrition from getting into it, and thereby causing stillbirths and, well, those problems. So, another way that the unborn are being affected. This causes a great deal of consternation for people who are very strongly pro-life, even though our bishop, even though our pope has said, get the vaccine. There are some people who have decided, and it's their personal decision, that because there may or may not have been, they're not going to take a chance, some kind of original research using fetal tissue, that they will not get the vaccine. Well, now we're finding that the unvaccinated, if they get pregnant, have a chance of losing their child, or you have a chance of infecting someone who is pregnant and they have a chance of losing their child. This is going to be a moral conundrum for a lot of people that at some later point I'll have to weigh in with the bishop and others to see what they have to say. But it's shocking news. And again, this is not something that came from some wacko website somewhere. They will be doing so-called more peer-reviewed studies and things like that. But again, new research suggests the coronavirus can invade and destroy the placenta and lead to stillbirths in infected women. Not good news. As the bishop says, this thing is of the devil. Coming up in a little bit, some look at some good things, some nice things, some uplifting things going on in the Diocese of La Crosse. You'll also be hearing that we're making some efforts to make a little better connection between me and the bishop audibly regarding how we do the show so you can hear him better. And I must say I'm impressed that the frugal nature of the communications department, because we are spending your money, not our money, carefully looking at a couple of pieces of software, finding the best one. Some offer discounts for nonprofits, things like that, all to save money. I have an extra microphone here in the studio I am not using, which I am going to, if they need it, loan to them to use, because why should they go out and spend another $150 when I have one here sitting in a box? This is the kind of thinking that goes on throughout the diocese because, once again, we're using your money that you donate to us in good faith. We don't squander it. And because of that, when the annual appeal messages come out to you, when they pass the plate at Mass, when you do Mass remotely and you want to contribute remotely, or you want to support Catholic charities, please keep that in mind, knowing that every dime that we give you is not spent in a cavalier method. If something is done to improve the cathedral or to put in the new crucifix, that wasn't done with collection plate money. That was a special fund that people donated to intentionally. All this is done very, very carefully. The Diocese of La Crosse is involved in so many wonderful projects that seem to be almost more likely done by larger dioceses. But we have a large heart. I really should say you have a large heart. You are the heart that keeps beating for this Diocese of La Crosse. And I can guarantee you this, you are never forgotten for what you're doing. The bishop knows that you are making these contributions, sometimes in hard times as well. And so we never forget you, we never forget where the money is coming from, and we thank you for every single thing that you do. Jack Socia here with you on Connecting the Diocese from the Diocese of La Crosse. It seemed like only a matter of weeks ago, actually it was probably around Christmas, that I was talking with Karen Becker from Catholic Charities about all the work they were doing there, getting things organized for the Afghan refugees who were coming in, around 12,000 of them, and how they were providing them with all kinds of things they needed, and the donations were coming in, and everything was going along just really well, and it really worked out great. Well, now we fast forward to now, the refugee site at Fort McCoy that had housed thousands of Afghans since it opened last summer is ending operations now that all of the refugees have been resettled. That's according to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. In a news release, the department said the last group of Afghan refugees left Fort McCoy a few days ago. Afghan refugees began arriving at Fort McCoy in late August after U.S. troops completed their withdrawal from Afghanistan. My understanding is that they're not just being placed willy-nilly around the country. They tend to be placed where there are already other existing Afghan communities. My only regret is I didn't get a chance to go over there and actually see what was happening, but of course I would be non-essential personnel, so I don't really have to be in the way stumbling around with a microphone. But it was just wonderful to talk to Karen Becker about all the work that was going on and about how one church came with half a dozen or two dozen layettes for newly born babies, and Karen said, could you make maybe 300? Things like that. Also, this little clip from Karen telling one of the stories that I thought said a lot of things about the refugees and about their hopes and aspirations, and in some cases, their concerns.
I think the funniest thing was watching a preteen boy. I was in at the base one day, and I was standing in a line because I was at the commissary, and I was purchasing a Gatorade. I needed something to drink, and his family was in line trying to purchase some supplies that they had. Like I said, they had nothing, and the base was just starting to gather stuff. And this is radio, so nobody can see me, but I have extremely light-colored hair. Some might call it gray. Some might call it light blonde. I tend to go with a light blonde, but my hair is uncovered on base, and which is most of the women still wear headscarves there. And then most of them are dark-haired and have dark eyes and dark hair. And this preteen boy was kind of peeking around his mother and just smiling at me. And I couldn't imagine what I was doing that could cause that much humor in this young man's life. And he pulls on his mom's sleeve, and his mom turns around and looks at me, and she grins really big. And I'm still thinking, I just said hello, and you know, I welcomed them, and I tried to have a little conversation with them, and she spoke pretty good English. But I got back to the Women's Children's Center, and there was a young 16-year-old standing there who spoke excellent English, beautiful young woman. And she was kind of had a similar grin on me, and I said, I have to ask. I said, I'm noticing that people are looking at me, and they're just grinning. And I said, am I doing something wrong? And she said, no, your hair color and your light eyes and your light hair, so many of us have never seen such beautiful hair before. And I had to pull, again, my picture of my granddaughter out. My granddaughter's grandfather on mother's side is from Bangladesh. And so my granddaughter has brown eyes and brown hair. And my daughter-in-law, and I said, well, actually, my granddaughter looks more like you than she looks like me. And she was like, no. And I said, yeah. And so I pulled a picture of my son, who has dark hair and dark kind of hazel eyes and a beard. And he was holding my granddaughter with dark hair and dark eyes, and showed it to this young woman. And she looked at me and she says, oh, he looks like an Afghanistan man. And I said, yeah, with the beard and the dark hair, yeah, he does. And it was like this enlightenment came across her face that she wasn't so different, that she was going to be able to be incorporated into our community and not stand out as much as I think she had feared. I think she had looked at me and thought, and a lot of our volunteers tend to be my age or older, and so a lot of us are kind of light blonde. And
yeah, me too.
I think she thought, yeah. And I think she had thought, how will I ever blend in? How, you know, and for a, she's about 16. And I have to imagine that in her head, there's a lot of fear about, okay, I'm at Fort McCoy and I'm safe here, but yes, eventually I'm going to be moving on to a new community and a new school. And will I be accepted?
Oh, yeah.
Will there be barriers?
Yeah.
Our communities have been outstanding in just showing love and hospitality and acceptance. And I hope we continue to do that.
And again, you know, this whole thing that happened at Fort McCoy and the involvement of Catholic Charities and the people who donated their time and their money and possessions to help these people out, all part of history. This is history going on around us. We have the sad history of COVID-19 on one hand, and we have the wonderful history of all this help going on the other. And it's sometimes difficult to just stop for a minute and take it all in and say, look what happened. This was something that's going to be in the history books, and you were here when it was happening. It was just a great experience. And my thanks to the folks at Catholic Charities for giving us a bird's eye view of what was going on. This little story from Milwaukee is not going to make history, but it's an awfully nice story. A Texas boy has been reunited with his long-lost teddy bear. The stuffed animal was left behind after Thanksgiving at Milwaukee's Mitchell International Airport. 5-year-old Ezekiel was tossing the teddy bear, and he got it stuck in the rafters, where it was finally found in January. The airport staff used social media to try to track down the owner. They posted pictures of the stuffed bear on Facebook, and it went, of course, viral. And 2 days later, word reached the family who had lost the bear. Southwest Airlines flew the family from Dallas to Wisconsin on Tuesday, and Ezekiel got back his special teddy bear to take back home. Now, because he was throwing this and it got stuck in the rafters, and he's only 5 years old, the Green Bay Packers are looking into a possible draft pick for him when he grows up. That was last part was just a joke, folks. I think. I mentioned at the beginning of the show that I never expected to be working from home for the better part of 2 years going on to 3 because of this virus going on. And one thing that we are experimenting with now, this is our communications department, is coming up with a better way audibly to connect with Bishop Callahan and perhaps other guests. Now, not everybody in the world has a high-speed internet connection and maybe a really good laptop and a headset and all these things. But those that do, there are now many opportunities to use an online service where you basically both go to a website and you connect, kind of like Zoom, except higher quality audio than Zoom has. And if things work out, and I suspect they will, in a few weeks, if our initial tests work out, we may be able to have a situation where Bishop will be sitting either in our studio at the diocese or even just in his office with his laptop and a headset on, and he will be able to log on to the site and I'll be able to log on to it, and we will have a conversation and we will be able to basically get good quality audio from both sides, not just me on a microphone and him on a telephone, and that file will then be sent to me and I'll be able to edit it and do all the things I'm supposed to do. If I'm not mistaken, there may even be, and I don't know whether this costs more money, it may, a transcription service where you could actually get a text file of what the conversation was about. Now, I'm not sure whether that's something we're going to get into, but it is fascinating to see that all these things are possible. And if I read the instructions correctly, or I should say the description correctly on this product, it is possible to get to up to 9 people signing in to this particular service. One person has the account, the other 9 people are guests. So it would be possible, theoretically, to have other people on with the bishop having cross conversations. Again, this is going to require people who have a laptop and have a high-speed internet connection, because generally speaking, if you just have a real slow modem thing, it's just not going to work. But the primary idea is to get a little better audio quality from our bishop, and so they can use that for the show and maybe for other things as well. So stay tuned for that. If all of a sudden things sound a little bit different after a couple of years of working the phone lines, you'll know we have found one more thing to work on to make things better and more wonderful for you, who I hope enjoys the show, regardless of what kind of connections we have. Oh, and by the way, I just walked in. Rosie the studio kitten says hello. Now you know why we occasionally play this special billboard opening to the show.
The following show was recorded in front of a live audience of house cats.
I was talking earlier about this idea of taking a step back and looking at all of the ramifications of some of the big things that go on around us and how it trickles down to us and affects people in all different kinds of ways. There has been this chronic shortage of people to transport goods, partly because of the COVID virus, partly because of energy costs. But, you know, a lot of people are just not there to move things left and right. And then those who are still moving things, especially from overseas, are charging a lot more money to do it because it's kind of a supply and demand kind of situation. And this, of course, then raises prices domestically, which is why, you know, a roll of ground turkey that was $1.99 is now $2.99. Chicken breast cost a lot more than they used to. Things like that going on. There are spot shortages everywhere. We just learned, of course, that a major local chain of convenience stores couldn't get their cardboard coffee cups. Who would have thunk it, right? You know, you had to bring your own in there. It's an amazing thought. But what has happened in your world that has changed? I have noticed things like we're eating a lot of plant-based stuff these days, and we eat a lot of Brown's Best pinto beans. We incorporate them into all kinds of things. And at one point, I went to the store, and there were none there except for one little one-pound package and one 25-pound package. And because we use a lot of it, I figured, well, all right. So I bought 25 pounds of pinto beans. Next time I went over there, there were all kinds of one-pound packages, but no 25-pound packages. It's just the strangest stuff. Same thing is happening with pet food. You know, your favorite pet food isn't there. Everything you can think of. We are so used to having an abundance of everything all the time at our fingertips in this country that it really kind of knocks us off our perch, you know, when we go to the store to get something and it's just not there. My wife has an allergy to wheat gluten, so we don't cook with wheat. We bake our own bread, and most of it is baked with teff flour. Teff is usually from Ethiopia or Peru, and we tried to go order some as we normally do and have done for years, and of course, it's not available. So we have to find something else, buckwheat flour or some other things that are out there. In some ways, this is, you know, not easy to do. I mean, it's kind of inconvenient. But in other ways, it does kind of stretch out a little bit so you could try different things. When the old favorite thing you don't have is just not available, well, you try something new. Just take a minute or so to realize how many things that have been involved with your local church have changed in the past 2 years because of COVID-19, and maybe will not be going back to the way they were for a considerable amount of time. Meetings, various events, doing things outside that you normally did inside, wearing masks, the choir singing or not singing, depending on how bad the COVID virus advisories happen to be. All these things are part of what we're living with and part of what we're going to be living with for quite some time. You have to really give credit to volunteers, to your pastors, to your religious, who are really doing everything they can to make sure that we can get as much worship done in a way that's acceptable within the constraints of being healthy. Not to mention what is going on in our Catholic schools and, of course, in our public schools. Tremendous amount of change. I don't know if we took stock of all the stuff that has changed in the past 2 years. Probably then we would realize why people are just yearning for things to go back to normal. One of the funniest things I saw, now this I'm going to have to explain to you because being a primarily Catholic audience, so this requires a little bit of explaining. In the Protestant churches, they do not have the same exact attitude towards the sacraments, namely communion. They have a different attitude towards the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ in communion. And they're a bit more... saying cavalier about it, I think, is probably a little unkind, but they take a different attitude towards how the wine and the host are disseminated. In many Protestant churches, they had these round brass containers about the size of a big pizza pan with holes in them, and they would put usually these little plastic cups that look like somewhat smaller shot glasses in them, which they would then fill with wine or grape juice, depending on which group you were dealing with. And people would take these, and they would then either dispose of them or wash them. I think in most cases, they dispose of them. Ever since the pandemic has hit, and there's been social distancing and things like that, within the Protestant communities, there has been this thing that has popped up, originally designed for missionary use, where it is a self-contained little thing. It looks kind of like a disposable ketchup pot or something that you'd get with, you know, or nachos or something. A little that holds a wafer on one side, and on the flip side, some wine and or grape juice, whatever it happens to be. Again, this is the outside of the Catholic tradition. And so now, to keep everything sanitized and people part from each other and all that, at some Protestant churches, they will hand these things out. And at the given time, they say, okay, now I would like you to peel back the top of this and take out the host, and they continue with that, and then flip this over, please, and peel off the top, and, you know, this is the precious blood. This has had the most unusual ripple effect. I was looking at a website that is owned by Amazon called Woot, WOOT.com, and they have a clearance area where they have all the strangest stuff you've ever seen that Amazon can't seem to get rid of. One of them was packages of hundreds of these little empty, slightly smaller than shot glass size plastic cups. Because now that these churches are all going to this self-contained thing, you know, with the host or with the wine and the wafer in it before they're consecrated, all of a sudden there's a gigantic surplus of these little tiny, slightly smaller than shot glass plastic cups. And you could buy like 100 of them for $6. Now, my question is, I have absolutely no idea what you would use those for outside of their original intended purpose. But if you want to get some, they're over there at Woot, WOOT.com. Look in the clearance section. I suspect strongly that they'll be there for quite some time. On a more serious note, we do know that energy prices have really gone through the roof for many of the same reasons that you can't get, you know, the brand of applesauce you normally like or whatever it happens to be. Transportation is rare and hard to find. There's a lot of people not working because they're out with the virus. There's just a demand and not enough people driving trucks and hauling stuff and doing things that have to be done. And so this also affects getting oil from point A to point B, and also pipeline repair and working with the places that refine it. The bottom line is it's gotten expensive. I was kind of surprised. We got our oil heat bill. We fill our tank up about two times during the winter, three times if we're not lucky. And it was well over $500, and certainly more than it was this time last year. Because we have an older farmhouse, and because the heating ducts are only on the lower floor, in extremely cold nights, we have to put on some electric heat in the upper floors. And I was kind of shocked. I opened up my electric bill, and it was up $100. So between those two, you know, there's a $600, $650 hit that you have to take all at one time. Well, a lot of people are not able to handle this right now. And a lot of people who are heating with electricity are taking advantage of the fact that if they can't pay their bills, they can't turn off your power. And the difficulty with that is that tends to accumulate. If you suddenly have a $170 electric bill and you simply can't pay it because you've been laid off at your job or whatever is going on, well, the next month it comes again and you say, I'll put it off. And next thing you've got a $400 bill, and next thing it's a $600 bill. And right around April 15th, unless for some reason the extension is made again because of the emergencies, that bill comes due, and if it isn't there, if you don't have the money, they will turn off your power. We've talked about this every single year. Now, I realize we're only in the middle of February, and March is another month, and April is another month, but you have to start thinking ahead. If you are looking at these bills, and they are piling up, especially the energy bills right now, it would be a really important time for you just to make a call to Catholic Charities to see what they can do to help out. They have helped out hundreds of people in exactly the same situation. They do get donations around this time every year, which is another reason why I'm talking about it in February. If you want to help out some people, you can give to Catholic Charities to the Special Power Cutoff Fund, and this will help out. They're not going to pay everybody's power bill for them. It doesn't work that way. But what they can do is they can do a token amount. And the thing is that once the power company knows that Catholic Charities is involved, they relax a little bit. It is often said that if you owe a bunch of money on a credit card or whatever it happens to be, car payment, I don't care, it doesn't matter, the worst thing you can do is stop communicating with the people you owe money to, because then they start to panic. So with the power companies, if you can say, I'm talking to Catholic Charities will be in contact with you regarding this. We're setting up a payment system. Everybody relaxes. And chances are that when the power cutoffs do become legal after the cold weather is over, that your power won't be cut off. So You can go for more information on this to ccclse.org if you're in the Diocese of La Crosse. ccclse.org. That's Catholic Charities. CCLSE would be lacrosse.org. If you're living outside of the Diocese of La Crosse, there are Catholic Charities near you. They have the same basic programs going on. Call them or visit them on their website and see if they can help you. Chances are they'll be doing that. And again, if you want to donate to help some of your neighbors who are really struggling and just need to keep the lights on and heat on, make a donation. Go to ccclse.org and it'll be a big and loving bit of help.
Jesus has commanded us not to build churches, not to do different sorts of things, but Jesus has commanded us to love one another. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. And that's the whole point.
Well, continuing on with what I'm calling my reporter's notebook show for this week, during these cold days when it's well below zero, especially at night, I don't go out and do much. We don't go out and shop. We don't, partly because these places aren't open, partly because we don't want to go out and shop. Too many people out there. But we have to find something to do. And one of the things we have been doing is going through stuff and getting rid of stuff that we can donate or in some cases just have to throw out. I rifle through my drawers finding things, and every once in a while something pops up that I think is, yeah, there's my old friend here, this thing I found years ago. I think Bishop and I read this probably 8 years ago. I don't even know where I found it. It's one of those things that sometimes people leave in stores. They're kind of like Bible tracts. And it was by someone named J.L. Tucker, and it was called Just Being Happy. Apparently it was part of some kind of evangelical radio program called Just Being Happy. It's a little booklet. This one is very well frayed because I've hung on to it. I'm going to read some of it to you, see if it makes sense to you during these tough times when you're trying to find ways to just be happy and be content during, again, challenging times. Here we go. Quoting now. The supreme desire of the human heart is for happiness. It is the quest of everyone. It makes life worthwhile. The desire for happiness is the impelling force that drives men and women to the ends of the earth to obtain this satisfying something. They search the wisdom of sages long gone to see where others found this utopian experience, hoping they, too, may obtain it. Comparatively few find it, yet all may. It is for all. Happiness is an art, not a science. It is a philosophy of life. It is largely a habit. We should get into the habit of being happy. Abe Lincoln hit the nail on the head with his usual accuracy when he said, "I've noticed that folks are generally about as happy as they've made up their minds to be." Some people seem to study to be pessimistic. They become the self-appointed inspectors of warts and carbuncles. They pride themselves on being guides to the slough of despondency. One such woman, being asked how she felt, said, "I feel good today, but I always feel worse when I feel the best, because I know how bad I'm going to feel when I get to feeling bad again." The parable of the two buckets is often repeated in human experience. Two buckets went to the well one day. One sobbed and said, "Oh me, it breaks my heart to think that however full we go away from the well, we always come back empty." The other bucket laughed and said, "I was congratulating myself on the fact that we, however empty, will come to the well and always go away full." I think we should spend some time every day in setting up exercises in happiness. Think for 10 minutes every morning of the things you have to be glad for. If you cannot take 10 minutes, take 5. Get into the habit of turning everything so you see its bright side. If somebody in your house gripes a lot, don't forget that sometimes they also sleep. If some folks in your house get on your nerves, be glad they're at work or in school for 6 to 8 hours a day. Build your house on the sunny side of the hill. Nothing matters except the way you look at it. Promise yourself to be strong, that nothing can disturb your peace of mind. To talk health, happiness, and prosperity to every person you meet. To make all your friends feel that there is something fine in them. To look at the sunny side of everything and make your optimism come true. To think only of the best. To work only for the best. And to expect only the best. To be just as enthusiastic about the success of others as you are about your own. To forget the mistakes of the past and press on to the greater achievements of the future. To wear a cheerful countenance at all times and give every living creature you meet a smile. Now we get to the good part here, the part I like the most. 12 rules for happiness. Again, happiness is a habit, a byproduct of right thinking and right living. So here are 12 rules for happiness. Number 1. Live a simple life. Be temperate in your habits. Avoid self-seeking and selfishness. Make simplicity the keynote of your daily plans. Simple things are best. Number two, spend less than you earn. This may be difficult, but it pays large dividends in contentment. Keep out of debt. Cultivate frugality, prudence, and self-denial. Avoid extravagance. Think constructively. Train yourself to think clearly and accurately. Store your mind with useful thoughts. Stand porter at the door of your mind. Cultivate a yielding disposition. Resist the common tendency to want things your own way. See the other person's viewpoint. Be grateful. Begin the day with gratitude for your opportunities and blessings. Be glad for the privilege of life and work. Rule your moods. Cultivate a mental attitude of peace and goodwill. Give generously. There is no greater joy in life than to render happiness to others by means of intelligent giving. Work with the right motives. The highest purpose in your life should be to grow in spiritual grace and power. Be interested in others. Divert your mind from self-centeredness. In the degree that you give, serve, and help, you will experience the byproducts of happiness. Live in a day-tight compartment. This means living one day at a time. Concentrate on your immediate task. Make most of today. Have a hobby. Study nature, walking, gardening, music, golfing, carpentry, stamp collecting, sketching, voice culture, foreign language, books, photography, social service, public speaking, travel, authorship. They're all examples. Cultivate an avocation to which you can turn to for diversion and relaxation. And finally, keep close to God. True and enduring happiness depends primarily upon close alliance with Him. It is your privilege to share His thoughts for your spiritual nourishment and to have constant assurances of divine protection and guidance. This poor little booklet is falling apart. I should probably scan it or something. And it's interesting, upon reading these year after year, and I've had that thing for probably 40 years, that almost regardless of what religion you look at, there is some list that very similarly parallels this. You know, giving, simple life, keeping good thoughts, avoiding avarice, and most important, staying close to God. It's very interesting. I remember Bishop and I read this years and years ago, and he was nodding in agreement. Basic things. Things that you should be able to kind of contemplate on. And again, boy, I'll tell you, the one that I think is so important right about now, in my opinion anyway, is being grateful. Being grateful for what you have. Being grateful for the fact that, is that one guy quipped in one website I was looking up? But all the things going on right now in this world. I get up in the morning and I'm feeling good. That I stretch out my arms and I don't hit wood. In other words, he's not in a casket. You're alive. It's like Bishop talking about, why are there birthday candles?
The candle, of course, on a birthday cake, the whole point of having a candle on a birthday cake is to blow it out. And in order to blow it out, you've got to have breath. In order to have breath, you've got to be alive. Yippee, you're alive. Blow out the candle.
So blow out that candle and say, thank you, Lord. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You are tuned to Connecting the Diocese at the Diocese of La Crosse, back after this. On many occasions, Bishop Callahan and I have talked about how some things that we say resonate to people who are listening, who are feeling that tug towards the priesthood or religious life. I want now to play a short excerpt of what the bishop said to a recent group of ordained priests. I want to see if it resonates with you. If you hear these words, you can imagine them being spoken to you at some future date.
The teaching of the Second Vatican Council is very clear in these areas. It says the work of the redemption is carried out because in the Eucharist, the death and resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ is renewed for His people. You will belong to the priesthood that exists so that the union with Christ and in the Holy Spirit, the people of God, can adore in proper worship, in spirit, and in truth. You exist to proclaim conversion and to be examples of holiness of life. You exist, as does your priestly mission, so that God's people may live in holiness and walk in newness of life. You can be sure that Christ's grace will always sustain you in the struggle against sin and in the quest for holiness. To trust that all the weakness and sins of the world are not equal to the power of the living Christ, who consecrates you today, so that you may be diligent in these matters, be absorbed in them, that your progress may be evident to everyone.
If those words resonate with you, if they fill you with that feeling when you hear them that something special is tugging at you, I urge you to contact the Diocese of La Crosse Vocations Office and ask them for more information about the priesthood. Even if it's just an inkling or a curiosity, maybe it's something bigger. Contact the Diocese of La Crosse Vocations Office today.
Hi, everybody. This is Bishop Callahan of the Diocese of La Crosse telling you once again that we are called to love one another. We are called to love one another and be our brother's keeper. There is just so much in the sacred scripture that reminds us when we do good for one another, that when we do an act of kindness for one another, we are doing it not just for the person who is standing in front of us, but for Jesus himself. We live in a time, brothers and sisters, where racism and the crimes against humanity are being multiplied because of the color of our skin, the manner in which we were born, the ethnicity of our lives. Please remember that our brothers and sisters, however they may be, from whatever community they may be, from whatever ethnic community they may be, from whatever belief they may be, these are people who are made in the image and the likeness of God.
The life of a contemplative, the life of a consecrated virgin, the life of a priest, the life of a married couple, to be single in the world, all of those are gifts. Vocation is gift. Nobody earns it. God gives us the graces that we need for whatever vocation that he calls us to.
The ability of people to come to Mass, to participate in the sacraments, to truly use the church for everything that they possibly can in terms of all the benefits that are provided for their souls, the peace of mind, the comfort, the solace, the ability to know that they are loved by God, to know that in each and every heart, the seed of God's love speaks most eloquently. And the church is a voice for that. The church is a means by which they can come into contact most vividly and extraordinarily the presence of God in their lives.
I think a lot of people came forward who hadn't volunteered for the church. I remember cleaning crews kind of stepping into places in the diocese where there's food distribution that's dependent on volunteers to put the packages together and then make available to families or students wherever the program reaches out. And the volunteerism, the number of hours that came in just skyrocketed as much as the need for technology. So there's some things that happened during the pandemic that will be here to stay for sure.
Everybody whom Jesus called to be a priest is very important in the sense that Jesus is calling them for some special reason.
In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, Amen. Christ be with me. Christ within me, Christ behind me, Christ before me, Christ beside me. Christ to win me, Christ to comfort and restore me, Christ beneath me, Christ above me, Christ in quiet, Christ in danger, Christ in hearts of all that love me, Christ in mouth of friend and stranger. I bind myself unto thy name, the strong name of the Trinity, by invocation of the same, the three in one, the one in three, of whom all nature hath creation. Eternal Father, Spirit, Word, praise to the Lord of my salvation. Salvation is of Christ the Lord. And may the blessing of Almighty God, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit descend upon you and remain with you forever. Amen.
Jack Socia here with you on Connecting the Diocese. That was a little audio mix of a few things from my audio reporter's notebook. I save little snippets of pieces of this show from years gone by and not so many years gone by. And occasionally I like to mix them together, see what they have to say when they're all combined. You sometimes wonder how much these historic stories about Fort McCoy and other things will be preserved so that future generations will hear us going, wow, that's actually what was really going on. That's really cool. I guess we'll just have to see whether we can archive them. We're spending a little bit of time earlier in the show talking about these next several days. We're going to be working with our communications department, experimenting with some interesting new techniques to allow higher quality audio for guests who come on the show, and even the possibility that you could have more than one guest on with the bishop. So we're going to see what happens. I want to thank the communications department at the Diocese of La Crosse for spending the time to work on this. It's quite a little project. It is not expensive. This is the amazing thing about today's technology. We're not talking about spending thousands of dollars a month or anything like that. We're talking about the cost of, you know, a couple, three pizzas, basically. But it can really make a big difference in how the show will sound. So I'm kind of looking forward to it, being a techno geek, to see how we can do it, and also just being interested in doing quality broadcasting to see how well we can do it as well. As you probably know, the last 100 shows are available at diolc.org/connecting. And so you can go through, the newest ones are at the top. And as you scroll down, of course, they get older. You can hear ones from Advent. You can hear ones from, you know, last Easter. You can hear all kinds of things. You can even hear the Cabin Fever show we did last week with Paul Sadek from Relevant Radio. So if you missed it, you can just go back and click on it. It'll just play. You don't have to sign in. You don't have to pay anything. You haven't got any passwords. You can also download them. So if you want to listen to them portably on your MP3 player or your iPhone or whatever, you can do that as well. No charge for these things. Last 100 shows are there. Again, you go to diolc.org/connecting. And while you're there, take a look around the website for the Diocese of La Crosse. There is so much stuff there. There are new online classes you can take, formation things you can do, all kinds of things to try to make things a bit more tolerable as we, in some cases, still stay away from getting too involved with lots and lots of people. I was somewhat distressed just before getting ready to finish this show, reading that there is yet another variant coming out, which they say is as aggressive as Omicron, but also as severe as Delta. Isn't that lovely? Yet another one coming out, and it has already reached the United States. It's in around 10 countries. This thing keeps evolving and changing. And so it does look like I will be working from home for some time, because we simply can't be too careful when it comes to this kind of stuff. It's not the time to put all your masks and your hand sanitizer and all that stuff away. It is just not there yet. We will keep people in our prayers who are sick and stay safe, because this is really serious stuff. And I know it gets tiresome hearing about it. We get tired talking about it. But we really care about you and want you and yours to be safe and just being able to be around. So as it sometimes said, it is what it is. We're getting down towards the end of this particular edition of Connecting the Diocese. I don't know how many of you have heard of the name Douglas Trumbull. If you are a science fiction aficionado, it may ring a bell. Long before there was computer animations and computer graphics that looked so realistic you couldn't tell them apart from the real thing, Douglas Trumbull worked on some of the most famous films in history. The light show scene, the opening cosmic gate in the movie 2001, was done by 23-year-old Douglas Trumbull. Again, not using any computers, just using film effects and mirrors and who knows what lighting to make those things happen. Also, some years later, many of you probably saw Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And when the huge starship descends upon the mountain and all these lights are going, all those effects were done by Douglas Trumbull. He was doing movie effects and mastering things back when, well, I was his age, 23. I wasn't doing anything even close to that. not even as close to creativity. I couldn't make a paper airplane. This guy's doing special effects for Stanley Kubrick. But he has been doing this for years. He also did a movie sometime around 1970. And it was indeed a science fiction movie. The primary actor in it was Bruce Dern, and it was called Silent Running. It was a movie partially inspired by Earth Day and really a precursor to all of our concerns about climate change built into a science fiction story. The story was simply that, again, in another century beyond us, we had managed to deplete the Earth to the point where all of the forests were not surviving. Every single one of them was dying. And so they took which ones they could, and they put several acres into a geodesic dome, and about three of them were attached to spaceships to orbit the solar system until the Earth was made clean enough that they could be replanted. And these three ships, with a total of about nine of these domes, were traveling around the solar system. They were self-sufficient. They had a crew on board, and in one case, Bruce Dern was kind of the ecologist of the crew. The rest of these guys, they could care less. This was just a job. And he and some small robots, three of them, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, were tending to these forests. They were self-contained. They had lights. They had water recirculating. All these things were done so they were completely self-sufficient. And he trained these robots how to plant things and weed and take care of the environment. Well, as fate would have it, of course, this is a science fiction story, the mean old corporations decided that this was just costing too much money, and so they told them to just jettison the domes into space and blow them up. Well, this, of course, Bruce Dern was simply beside himself, and he essentially hijacked a ship with one remaining dome with the idea of traveling through the universe and keeping this forest alive. It didn't work out for him. And in the final scenes of the movie, he is going to send this dome off into space, simply being taken care of by one of the small robots he had trained. Now, in most of these movies, there's all kinds of heroic orchestral music and a lot of John Barry stuff and things like that. In this movie, the last scene shows this dome of several acres size with a forest with creatures in it and plants and water and flowers drifting off into space with a tiny robot with a watering can. No bombastic music, a special song written and performed by Joan Baez. Douglas Trumbull died this past week, and he contributed a lot both to science fiction and to the thought about Mother Earth being a place worth preserving. So I'll leave you with Rejoice in the Sun by Joan Baez. See you next week.